Welcome to Season 2, Episode 78 of the Banded About podcast series. Joining me in the engine room today is a musician who began playing on the local scene in the 80s as a bass player. In the 90s, he began drumming in various bands and has since continued to play in a variety of bands, either on bass or on drums. He currently plays bass in two local bands and is the drummer for the very popular Australian Alice Cooper Show. But before I introduce today's guest, it's first time for me to play the Banded About theme song, which was written and recorded for the Banded About podcast series by the very talented Catherine Lambert and Michael Mitzi Bryant. It is with great pleasure that I welcome Stephen Smith. Welcome, Steve, and thank you for making time to chat with me today.
Good morning, Di. Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. Let's start from the beginning, Steve. Where were you born?
I was born here in Adelaide. I tell people I was born on the beach, which is not too much of a lie, but I was born on the Lefevre Peninsula. There was a hospital there that is now a nursing home. Port boy, born and bred. Moved around a bit. Went to state a couple of times, but yeah, Adelaide born. Back in the 60s, smack bang in the middle of the 60s, it was. Good time to be born, I reckon.
Yeah, great. Did either of your parents come from a musical background or anybody else in your family?
Not really, no. On my mum's side, we were 10-pound poms. On my mum's side, they were pretty musical. That was just what you did, you know, in those days. Back in the old country, had an upright piano and that's what you did. Mum, although there was only her and her brother, her mum was one of the eldest in a large family, so a lot of her uncles and aunts were more like our cousins. So, you know, they had the normal Saturday knees up, you know, pull back the furniture and everyone played an instrument. So my maternal grandfather was a drummer. Yeah, so I guess it sort of came from there.
Okay.
I was always one of the kids that, when I was younger, wanted to run away and join the circus. And then I got into sound effects. I pictured being one of those guys that made sound effects for movies. And then being an awkward teenager, I realised, and, you know, growing up with Kiss and The Sweet and bands like that, you know, being an awkward pimply teenager, I realised that rock stars get the girls, so I thought, I'm going to sell my soul to rock and roll.
Fair enough. So after you decided that you were going to become a rock star, what was it that made you choose the drums?
I think it was Mick Tucker from The Sweet. I remember it was getting to around the age when I was about 8 or 9 and Mum came up to my brother, and I'm the youngest out of three, so I've got an older brother and an older sister. And Mum came up to us one Easter and said, look, chocolate's not good for you, so you can get something else. So I decided I wanted a record. My sister being 11 years older and her being a teen, I remember her buying, you know, the latest Beatles 45, or I remember her buying when their Spectrum first came out, when Santana's first album came out, you know. So I remember sitting on Saturday mornings, sitting with her watching Happening 70s with Ross T. Wiley. I remember seeing the film clip to Bridge Over Troubled Water, and as an emo little 5, 6-year-old, I was really taken aback by how powerful, you know, music could be to stir the emotion. So I think that memory stayed with me. When I was about 8, Mum said, look, you can't have chocolate anymore. You have to have a gift. So I wanted the record. And the record I wanted was a Suzy Quatro record. But when it came time to buy it, it had the front cover had one of the band members, I think, sculling a long neck. So she said, you're not having that record. So I think I chose Desolation Boulevard by The Sweet. Mick Tucker on there really, really impressed me. And then my uncle was, you know, he'd always had an inkling to be a DJ of sorts. That's what he wanted to do. So he ended up working on community radio and he was a bit of a jazz fan. So he lived just around the corner. So when I was bored, I used to go around his place and beg him to put on his Buddy Rich and Duke Ellington records and whatnot. So he sort of gave me a bit of a education in big bands and jazz and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think I just took it up from there. I was always tapping. I was always fascinated with the bounce you could get with a knife and used to drive my old man crazy. It wasn't my first instrument. When I started, you know, when I decided I was going to do music when I was a teenager, I obviously wanted to be a singer. Because, you know, singers get the chicks. And I couldn't sing for Toffee, so I thought, oh, well, second after that is a guitarist. So I wasn't too bad on guitar, but then realised I didn't really have a knack for it. Yeah, sold the guitar to Jim Hermel. A few people have heard of Big Jim Hermel. So I sold a guitar to him, or traded the guitar to him and a bit of cash and bought my first drum kit. But I had to sneak it in because we had a rumpus room back in the day and my old man said, you're not having a drum kit here, but I bought it anyway. And had to store it at my friend's place and then bit by bit, one stand, one drum, one cymbal at a time, just bit by bit sneak it into the rumpus room. And, you know, by the time it was there, it was like, okay, well, it's here now. I can't get rid of it. But he made me go to the next door neighbours and say, look, you can have the drum kit here, but you have to go to the next door neighbours and say that you've got a drum kit, and if they get annoyed with it, then that's it, the drum kit's got to go. So that was my earliest days on the drums. But professionally, I started off on bass.
Yeah,
so I started in the 80s on bass pretty much the first 10 years. I didn't really start playing drums professionally till about 94. So I'd spent the first 10 years playing bass. You know, a lot of the bands I was in, I got sick and tired with the drummers. What on earth are you listening to? So I thought, well, I could probably do this better, and got impatient with them, and that was it. Went on drums. I thought, well, you know, most people want to be either singers or guitarists, but if you're in the rhythm section, then if you're pretty good at what you do, then you're never out of work. So I've always been in a band playing bass or playing drums ever since.
Excellent. So where did you go to school?
Taparoo High. Taparoo had a bit of a reputation as one of the worst in the state, but we had some pretty cool teachers. You know, there was some teachers that got assigned there that thought it was like going to, you know, a war zone. So they pretty much had it in their mind that, you know, we were going to stab them in the back or something like that. But we had some teachers there that just were pretty cool. And, you know, as much as it was a rough neighbourhood, the friends I've made from there have realised, like, years later you have school reunions and that sort of thing. And you get to a certain age where you've had a bit of life experience and you met a lot of people, but come back to a school reunion and you realise all those people you went to school with are some of the best people you've ever met.
Yeah, true.
Obviously, being a peninsular guy, there's definitely a community spirit down at the port.
Mm. And did you study music?
No, so I was self-taught. I had the drum kit in the rumpus room and bought a headphone extension to plug into the old LPs. Were still there then. So plugged in and just listened to pretty much who everyone listened to, you know, listened to Bonham, listened to Purple, listened to Cream and Hendrick and that sort of thing. And after that, once I moved out of home, that was pretty much the last time I really had a drum kit to practice. So the last 40 years, because I've been living with girlfriends or in share houses or whatnot, or living in flats, there's no room or you can't have drums around. So I pretty much just practice while sitting on a forklift or sitting at a desk and getting your paradiddle practice in that way.
Okay. So what was the first job that you had after you left school?
First job was as a storeman called Southcotts in town. They had many departments, so they did a lot of engineering, fitting and turning, motor reconditioning. The section I was in was spare parts. Back in those days, I was earning $114 a week as a storeman, and then playing gigs, I was earning anywhere from 50 to 70 bucks a gig. So I was thinking, well, for one gig, I'm getting almost a weekly wage. First few years back in the 80s and 90s, you definitely felt, well, I can make a living out of this, even if they become famous.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, every pub had a band at least once a week. You know, it was really easy to play two or three nights a week. Those times have changed. Hopefully we can get back to that stage.
Be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. There was a lot of good bands in those days too, a lot of good original bands, a lot of good cover bands. You could sort of call it an industry town as far as music goes. After that, when it started to decline a bit, you know, pokies came in and the CBD became a bit more, you know, residential, and you've got noise complaints every 5 minutes. He sort of felt like, oh, well, I've got to go to Melbourne or Sydney or overseas to if I really want to be serious about this. But back in the day, felt like, well, you know, I could sort of launch from here. A lot of bands did. You know.
Yes, definitely.
Told Stories and FAB and all those sort of guys. And a lot of really top-class cover bands as well.
Yeah.
Good times.
So what's the first band that you joined as a drummer?
As a drummer would have been with a couple of brothers. Probably best musicians I've ever played with. Quentin Fernandez used to play, was the singer with a band called No Quarter. It was a band I used to go see. So him and his younger brother Ian on guitar joined up with them. Yeah, we ended up having a cover band called The Funky Leftovers. It was just a top 40 band, just doing sort of groovier versions of top 40 stuff. And that played around for a while. And then Ian and I talked about doing original stuff. So Ian started writing and we started working on songs. We moved to Melbourne and started trying to find the members there and just recorded a whole heap. We ended up forming an original band called The 11th Hour, which was pretty popular for a couple of years. Did a couple of supports with the likes of Ian Moss. Got a couple of good raps about that. Phil Small loved us. We got Encores, which is pretty unheard of for a support group. We got a couple of good ratings in the Sammy Awards and whatnot. And then, as usual, then you have personnel problems and it ends up just being you and the guitarist. So you just record a whole heap, sort of parted ways. And I just decided to keep on trying to find work, joining different bands on bass and drums. Moved to Perth for a while, played in different bands there, played in bands similar to John Butler, or played country, which I thought I'd never do. Different genres will teach you different things.
Yeah.
Just before I moved to Perth, I was playing in a thrash metal band, so I went straight from that, where I was tuned down, this is on bass, playing to country, where it's a lot less frenetic. But you learn different things from different genres. So from learning how to play country, you learn the timeline of rock and roll. Country gives rock and popular music its format. Gave it the verse, chorus, middle eight. Before that, contemporary music was dancehall or swing, big band jazz. Blues gave it the grit, and country gave it more of the format. Tell a bit of a story and put it into that two verse, chorus, middle eight sort of format. Country gave that to rock and roll. If I couldn't get a gig on drums, then I'd get a gig playing bass. If I couldn't get a gig on bass, I'd get a gig on drums. Now I'm in three bands, so I play bass in two bands and I play drums with the Alice Cooper Show.
Can you remember your first major gig?
First professional gig was a place in Murray Bridge called The Ranch. Yeah, that was pretty cool. Felt like a bit of a rock star there. I was all of 18 and probably weighed about 50 kilos ringing wet. But, yeah, that was cool. So back in those days you had a slab of VB. That was the rock star's beer. So you had a slab, you got accommodation, you got a meal. Yeah, that was my first actual professional gig. And then I think the second one was at the Alma. And then it went on from there. You know, we played the Royal Admiral, Duke of York, all the various pubs around town. It was at Lark and Tina's in Hindley Street when it was still called Lark and Tina's. Warwick Cheadle found us, said, oh, look, you guys, you know, whenever we're playing in town, would you guys like to be our support group? So that was pretty cool. We did a couple of supports with them at the Tib and whatnot.
Yeah.
But there was one time where we had a couple of gigs that weekend. We had a Friday night at the Leg Trap and Saturday supporting FAB at the Tib. And during the week, all our gear got stolen from the band room. All we had left was the drummer and his drumsticks, and the guitarist and I had our guitars. So we phoned the guys from FAB out and said, look, we can't do it. We haven't got any gear. And they said, look, don't be silly. Just come and plug into our gear. So that was nice of them.
Yeah, it was, but that was pretty shitty to have all your gear stolen.
Yeah, I think every muso's had that story, having gear stolen. It's heartbroken. A lot of money to repay stuff. But bit by bit, we got off that. That were the early days on bass. The early days on drums were similar sort of venues, playing local pubs. It was different then because Well, the first band I really played drums on was the original band. So original band to top 40 bands are slightly different venues. And then for a while, the Gaslight had a jam night on Thursdays. And that was sort of a networking night. At the time, it was for a lot of out-of-work musos to try and network and try and form other bands. So we ended up being the house band there. And so I'd take my bass along as well. So we'd get on, do a couple of sets, and then in between, it was a chalkboard. You'd put your name down and get up and do a song. And there'd be a couple of guys march on and say, look, we want to do Vaseline, then you're the only guy that knows how to drum it. So every week I'd have to play Vaseline on drums, which is cool. I love that song.
Yeah, it is a cool song.
And we did that every Thursday for 3 years. So that was cool. Made a lot of contact, made a lot of friends.
Yes, the Gaslight was certainly a great place to meet and make connections with other musicians. And it's a pity that we've lost that venue, because there isn't anywhere else like that, really, is there? Steve, do you have a memorable gig story that you'd like to share?
I think probably the biggest one probably would be that first support with Ian Moss, where we played at Heaven. This is going to sound really, really bad talking about Ian Moss this way, but I remember we'd scored the support, and I think we saw a couple of us in the band went and saw Mossy play at the Tiv. I think it was promoting the Petrolhead. And we saw the band there and we thought, wow, who he's got playing for him are nowhere near the caliber of musos that he had playing the first album. We thought, oh, well, he's probably just picked up a couple of local guys or whatnot. So when we came to do the gig, we thought, well, if he's got that same band, then, you know, we'll nail it. We'll look pretty good. And he did have that same band. So we came on and we just did our original stuff and we were really pumped. And like I said, we just nailed it. We had three encores, so I felt pretty much on top of the world. That was probably the standout gig. It's really hard to find a gig you don't like. You know, there's plenty of gigs where we call them ghost gigs, where you're just playing to disinterested bar staff and the security guy, and you think, what am I doing? But then at the end of the day, if you're playing with good musos and you're getting off on playing with each other, then at the end of the day, even if you had a pretty bad gig, you still have that magic of playing together and creating that magic with other good musos. So you can flip things around.
Yeah.
Steve, is there a band that you wish you'd had the opportunity to play with?
Local band, you're saying, or any band?
Any.
Yeah, we sometimes in downtime, you have that hypothetical conversation like, who do you think you would be able to replace in a famous band? So I always thought I could replace Chad Smith in the Chili Peppers. That was my first go-to. Or Presswitch in Chisel. I thought I could do that one. Some people have said sometimes I sound like Brain that used to play for Primus. I guess the Chili Peppers one, as far as drums go, that would be my dream to play with those guys. That would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. So how do you prepare yourself before a show?
Make sure I eat. Make sure I don't go to a gig on an empty stomach. Especially nowadays, I make sure I stretch, do some breathing exercises before just to get my mind a bit calm. As anyone will attest, if you've ever heard a rock band play live, they're always faster than the record, and the drummer gets the blame for that. I'm just as guilty as that as any other rock drummer. So good to make sure you're in a calm spot and not too over-nervous, not overstimulated before you're about to go on. So you've definitely got the tempo and the meter in your head before you start. You get those nerves before you get there. Once I get to a venue, then I sort of calm down. I like getting there early. You're sort of happier anyway because you're the drummer, you've got the most to set up. But once I'm there and I walk around, I just like getting the vibe of the venue, and you sort of feel like, okay, well, I'm here now, I'm acclimatized to the place, I'm acclimatized the vibe of it, especially if it's a big gig, you know, like some of the Alice Cooper shows. Then once you get the vibe of the place, you sort of feel that, okay, well, once we get on stage, we can own this venue, let loose and perform and put on a good show and give the people what they want.
Excellent. Steve, how has the pandemic impacted you?
I work for myself, so three bands is part of the income. I also practice hypnotherapy, so I'm a clinical hypnotherapist as well. So it's hit everything. You lose clients, you lose gigs. You know, we're into the third year of it, and you think, okay, we're starting to get around the corner. First couple of months, you have five gigs cancelled. It's not only the gig you don't get to do, it's also the time and effort and money that goes into promoting a show.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing that people don't realise, even if you get a show back. One of the bands I'm playing with, we had a New Year's Eve show. It's a band I actually play bass in called Rock House, building up for that, and it gets cancelled right at the last minute and got that gig back. at venue, but now we've got to rebuild and re-advertise and re-promote and try and get all the tickets back. It's not a New Year's Eve show, so you can't charge the same amount. You know, the Alice one has been huge. We've had probably 3 tours to interstate cancel in the last 2 years. You've ever seen the Alice show? It's a pretty big show, you know. It's
it's massive. Yeah, it takes a lot of planning to get all of you interstate to begin with.
Yeah, and it's a big show. It's rock theatre, 2 hours of full-on rock theatre. The feedback we get is people saying, you know, like, I couldn't take my eyes off the stage because I thought I was going to miss something. You know, there's every song has got props or costume changes, a Cyclops coming out, or there's a guillotine going off and whatnot. The shows are big and the show deserves to tour. We were about to go to Perth last year for a couple of shows. And so a couple of the band that we're going to fly across, Dave and I and a couple of others, we hired a trailer and a van, and we were going to spend 3 days just driving across the Nullarbor, save money. And about half an hour before we're about to pick up the trailer and the van, we got the call that the borders were closed. It's heartbreaking. You know, you have to try and pick yourself back up and maintain that enthusiasm and not get too jaded and not get too cynical and just keep on plugging forward, keep on trying to stay busy. Dave's got a recording studio, so to combat that, just keep our hand in it, keep our enthusiasm up. All the songs that we do in the Alice show, we've recorded as a band in our own right.
Yeah. You
know? When we're all in isolation, we all went there, you know, you're allowed 2 people in your house. We all went there one at a time. So I had to go in there and try and remember what it was like to hear a 8-piece band and put our tracks down. And then bit by bit, everyone came and recorded their bit. Just things like that. We're not playing, we're not gigging, but still feel like a muser. So it's important to keep doing those sorts of things.
True. Is there a positive at all that's come from the lockdowns that wouldn't have occurred for you otherwise?
It's hard to find the positives. I guess what it has done is given me the time to, as I was saying before, I haven't really had the opportunity to get a proper practice routine up and running. So I guess that time has given me that. I invested in a electronic drum kit so I can practice without disturbing anyone. Researched a lot of YouTube videos on bass techniques and drum techniques and that sort of thing. Revisited theory on modes and scales and whatnot and worked on technique and that sort of thing. So I guess that downtime has got me back into having a decent practice routine. But apart from that, it's damage control, really, isn't it? How you can pace yourself without pulling your hair out.
Yeah, true.
This year, I do think we're over the curve. As much as there's still deaths occurring, there's 3 to 4 people, unfortunately, dying a day here in Adelaide. Mm. There's still a lot of cases. There's still variants are still coming. In spite of that, I do think we're over the worst of it. You know, hopefully it'll just get to the stage where it's just like a flu shot each year and it's not causing deaths anymore.
Yeah, hopefully. Steve, if you could only offer 1 tip to a brand new drummer, what would it be?
I'd say I think there's 4 fundamentals that make a good drummer and the rest is all the icing on the cake. First thing is get a metronome and work on your meter. So your meter is how you interpret time and get used to everything you're doing being in that meter, because there's nothing worse than a drummer that slows down or speeds up or plays and then the fills are too fast or the fills are out of time. So that's probably the most important thing. You look at a drummer like Charlie Watts, not overly flashy, or Jim Keltner is a perfect example, just someone that can be there, because at the end of the day, you want that pocket. You want everyone in the band, you want everyone that's listening to just feel that beat. It's a hypnotic thing.
All right, Steve. Who are your top 3 local drummers?
I'd have to say the one guy that got me onto thinking about drums would be John Zapp. You know, those early days when I was late teens and we did those supports with FAB, you know, I just loved John's feel and his groove. He had that old silver Rogers kit he used to have. He used to do like broken ride patterns and these simple tom fills he used to do. Like if you listen to FAB, he just does these simple gut sort of fills on from the tom and the snare. And he just had this really nice groove. So that he was probably the local drummer that I like. A couple of years ago, I met a guy called Pete Kershaw with me on bass. He's filled in a couple of times. I really love playing with him. He's a great drummer. And we just lock in straight away, filled in with us on Saturday night. With the band, actually, that you are credited with naming, the Rock Hudson Ensemble.
Uh-huh. Yep.
That's yeah. That was it. Yeah. Thank you for that.
My pleasure.
That's a good conversation starter, that one.
That should be a trivia question one day. Who named it?
It should be, yeah. Who named it? Yeah. Only we know. So, yeah, he filled in with this on Saturday night. And, you know, like you just have one of those drummers that listens.
Yeah.
And you lock in. And like I say, every time he fills in, it's great. You know, we can just lock in and bang. Obviously, it's 40-odd songs that he had to quickly learn in two practice sessions. So we did interpretations and that was it. He sort of listened to what I was doing and I listened to what he was doing, and we came up with very interesting versions of Daniel by Elton John and Moon Dance and Evil Ways and whatnot, but it was good. And then the third would probably be Con Kirkus that runs the drum shop at Derringer's. And again, so I met Con years ago through the Fernandez brothers, so I've filled in a couple of times with him, and again, great shops, great drummer to listen and, you know what the drummer's going to do. From a bass player's point of view, it just makes everything you do have that context, hit an accent, and you know he's going to hit it as well. Or if you're going to do a run, you know it makes sense because the drummer is helping you make sense, if that makes sense.
That makes sense, yes.
So they would be my three favourite drummers I've played with.
Excellent. I want you to choose the three most important to you from the following five. So we have groove, creativity, chops, technique, and time. Out of those five, which three are most important to you as a drummer?
Well, if we go from the process of elimination, technique is good in a sense that it can help build your chops. But, you know, I've seen some drummers that have some awkward-looking technique that are still great drummers. My technique, because I'm self-taught, I'm only now learning a better technique because playing how I did for so long has sort of messed up my forearms. So I get a lot of pins and needles now from all those years of just holding the stick, not being relaxed enough. So you're tensing up when you're playing instead of being relaxed. Played bass in an original band called Moray Gunn, which is a three-piece. And the drummer in that is a fighter, and he's a great drummer, Nick Randall. So he would be fourth on the list. Playing with him and watching him play, he had a really relaxed way of playing, even though he was really fast and snappy, which you have to be to play that stuff. But I realised that, you know, you actually play louder and faster when you're relaxed. Just watching him play has taught me that. So in answer to your question, I'd probably have to say groove is important. When I was playing in the metal band, I would still talk about groove, which used to raise a few questions. But groove to me is how the music moves you. If you're watching a thrash metal band, you still want that metal band to move you in a certain way, and that's what the groove is. Creativity is good. That's what keeps it interesting. And I would say timing. I'd say they'd probably be the top three.
Excellent. Yep. Steve, if you could invite any musicians to play a concert with you anywhere in the world, you're on the kit, who would you call? Where would it be held? And what genre would the band be performing?
I mean, I'd like to do a jazz gig somewhere, but I don't have the chops for that and play with a lot of heroes. I don't know. I think I'd like to play a nice, laid-back R&B type gig. And I reckon on bass, so a lot of the guys that are my heroes are dead now, unfortunately.
Oh, it's okay, because we can resurrect for this scenario.
Oh, okay. Well, if I could do like a blues thing, I'd play with Donald Duck Dunn. I reckon that would be cool. If I did something a little bit more avant-garde, I'd probably play with Doug Wimbish from Living Colour.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon that'd be cool. Either those two on bass. On guitar, I reckon Andy Summers from The Police.
Mm-hmm.
Keyboards, I reckon. I'm going to put on keyboards, Chick Corea, I reckon. Why not? That would get really interesting. And then maybe Branford Marsalis on sax, and then see what happens from that. That'd be cool. Anywhere in Europe, Paris, Amsterdam, or Carnegie Hall.
What would you be playing?
I think we'd just jam. We'll just take turns coming up with a groove and then see what happens. So it would be instrumental, probably just be avant-garde, techno-jazz type of thing.
Great.
Yeah.
Is there something that you've really tried to play that you couldn't get right or you weren't satisfied with the way that you played it?
I've got time hasn't run out yet, but I'd taken lessons a lot earlier and developed proper jazz chops. I love bebop. I love the old bebop guys. Billy Joe Jones and Max Roach, all those sort of guys. Even the newer guys that play jazz, they just have phenomenal chops. I wish I'd learnt how to play Orthodox group, then branch out into some cool Latin stuff. Branch out from there into some world music. If you've ever been to a WOMAD, you hear some music from Asia and all over the world, you start to realise how complicated rhythms can be, how polyphonic or polyrhythmic rhythms can get.
Do you ever get bored with your own playing?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there was a while there where I was playing drums in an original band. We were a little bit like Foo Fighters, that sort of genre, late 90s sort of hard rock. And, yeah, I got really bored with my playing and just decided not to play drums for a while. If you don't have that routine where you're practicing and learning new stuff, yeah, you can get bored pretty easy. If you don't work on your vocabulary and if you don't push yourself to constantly be learning different things. The whole point of practice is working on your weak points. What I'm working on now is making sure that before I start a gig, I'm in the right frame of mind. So I'm not playing a song that's meant to be 100 BPM. I'm not playing it at 120 BPM. Mm,
yeah. Excellent. So how many bands and projects are you currently involved with on a regular basis?
So three bands at the moment. So obviously I play drums in the Alice Cooper Show, the biggest musical venture at the moment. But obviously, because it is such a big show, it's not going to be a once a week, once a month type of thing. I also play bass in aforementioned Rock Hudson Ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with Dave as well. So Dave plays Alice because he also busks, but he's also a singer-songwriter in his own right. So a couple of years ago, he brought out his own CD of original stuff. And that's sort of how the Rock Hudson Ensemble band started off. The Alice thing does take up a lot of his time, but like you said, it's not a weekly thing. So I said to him, well, if you're getting bored, mate, why don't you just get a band together and do all your original stuff and your busking songs? So the rest is history. So that's the Rock Hudson Ensemble doing all his busking songs, and eventually we'll do his original songs. And then one of the female singers in the Alice Cooper band, Cindy Brown, she has a cover band called Rock House, and they needed a drummer for a couple of gigs. They lost a drummer, so I filled in with them and did a couple of gigs in 2019, just before COVID hit. And then the guitarist left, so they decided to get a keyboard player. And then I thought, well, now that we've got these new guys in, let's revamp the song list. So some of the songs they were coming up with, I thought, I'm playing these on bass, actually. And it just so happened that the bass player in that band, Rowan, he plays drums as well and sings. So he was doing a Midnight Oil tribute band with Stuart Day, and so he was singing on that. So I just said to him, I said, look, you know, if you want to go on drums, I don't mind going on bass. He thought, well, it's easier for me to sing on drums, so do you want to play bass? So I've ended up playing bass in that band. Three bands all up, and that keeps me pretty busy.
Great. Where do you see yourself in the next 10 years?
Still playing, hopefully. Yeah, it's funny, you know, sometimes you know, the older you get, it takes a little bit longer to recover after a gig and you're a bit stiffer and sore and whatnot. You have a bit of a whinge and complain to whoever wants to listen. But the Rock Hudson band, we practice at Paul Sharman, the drummer. He has his room, the Booty Lounge, which is a rehearsal studio in its own right. And one morning we had to wait around because the master's apprentices were practicing in there, which is good for me because Turn Up the Radio was one of the first songs I did when I was a teenager. It was one of the first songs I learnt in the first high school band I was in. So I thought, oh, they sound pretty cool. And because the first guy to walk out was the bass player. In one hand he had his walking stick and under the other arm he had this immaculate Telecaster bass. I thought, well, those guys still sounded pretty cool. If old Maybe here can still crank it out and still do a gig with a walking stick, looking 80 if he looked 90, then I should shut up and stop whinging. So keep playing till I can't. So hopefully in 10 years I'm still playing.
What do you hope to have achieved before you do lay down the sticks for the last time?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, for a long time, I wanted to head my own band and, you know, write my own music. So, you know, at least getting that recorded would be nice. It'd be nice to get to a stage where I've earned enough money to buy a house. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, I'm probably going to have to give up drums before I have to give up bass. So as long as I can still play bass. If I have to give up bass and drums, I don't know what I'll do after that. I think recording my own stuff, that would be nice. And maybe at least heading my own band and getting a few gigs with that. Being able to say, well, okay, I've earned enough money to buy a house and retire, that would be nice.
Yeah, it would.
Bandit About.
Before we end our chat today, I'm going to ask Steve 20 quick random questions, or as many as we can get through in the space of 2 minutes to close the interview. Are you ready, Steve?
I am ready.
Excellent. Your time starts now. What is your favourite Alice Cooper song to play?
Halo of Flies.
Your favourite venue?
The Gap.
What was the first album that you purchased?
Desolation Boulevard by The Sweet back in 1974.
Alice Cooper's father, grandfather and father-in-law all held the same profession. What were they?
I think they were preachers.
Correct. Your favourite TV show?
At the moment, I've just finished watching Clickbait on Netflix, which is highly recommended.
Name a band that you wish you'd seen perform live.
Oh, everyone would have to say Zeppelin or Hendrix. That or Frank Zappa.
The most sticks that you've dropped during a gig?
Three. I reckon it was around the time when I was getting pins and needles, dropping them like flies.
After the original Alice Cooper band disbanded, three of the members formed another short-lived band called what?
Dave's going to kill me for this. I was going to say Hollywood Vampires, but that's not it.
No, Billion Dollar Babies.
Oh, I was going to say that. Should have.
What was the first concert that you went to?
Kiss at Memorial Drive.
True or false? In 1977, Frank Sinatra performed You and Me live at the Hollywood Bowl.
False.
True. Your favourite album?
Favourite album? God. First off the bat, Stain by Living Colour.
What's your favourite radio station?
103.9 classical.
Vinyl or CDs?
Vinyl for the sound, CD for the convenience.
Name a genre that you don't like. We're out of time.
That one, that genre.
Thank you once again, Steve, for joining me for the Banded About podcast today. You've been great to chat to, and I hope that everyone who listens finds this as enjoyable as I did.
Excellent. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. All of the information and links relating to today's interview can be found in the show notes. And if you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, please share the link with your friends. Until next week, it's goodbye from me, Di, Banded About, proudly supporting live music. Bye.
See ya.
Above them all, I can see it coming, I can see it coming miles away. Well, you talk the talk, but can you walk the walk? When I see you coming, I wanna turn the other way. You'll never know until it hits ya. Don't ever hide unless it fits ya.